His original name was Vastenik Manoug Adoyim. He grew up an Armenian Christian in what is now known as Far East Turkey. But when the Turkish army took the region from the Armenians during the First World War, and possibly the 20th century's first attempt at genocide, his family fled to Russia, where his mother died in 1919. Eventually, Adoyan settled in New York in the United States of America, changed his name to Ashil Gorky, and reinvented himself as an artist. Now the Tate Gallery in London is showing a retrospective exhibition of Gorky's work. I spoke to the exhibition's curator, Matthew Gale.
His eldest sister and his half-sister set off for America, funded by their father, who was already in America. And they were really holding out in the hope that more funding would arrive, as many Armenians were, so that they could all emigrate. But in 1919, the mother died of starvation, essentially, leaving Gorky and his younger sister to fend for themselves and to rely upon support from the extended family there.
How did he get to the United States then?
Well, a cousin did help him get to, and his sister, to Constantinople, where they then, after again a delay, boarded a boat which took them to America, and they arrived in February 1920. It was must have been an extraordinary experience, having grown up in the countryside far from the sea, suddenly to be making this long sea journey through the Black Sea, the Mediterranean, the Atlantic, to an entirely new country. They were greeted there, of course, by their sisters and half-brothers and eventually their father. So they had a family to turn to, but it must have been an added trauma on top of all the others.
Why did he change his name?
I think that's a very good question. Partly, I think it establishes his identity as an artist, as a self-invented figure. It has a good modern ring to it, I think. It's a name that evokes also the famous novelist Maxim Gorky, the Russian novelist. And he was, I think, keen to associate himself with the social advances of Russia at that stage. The slight hitch in the process was because he was claiming that he was a cousin of Maxim Gorky, was that Maxim Gorky was also a pseudonym.
I didn't realize that. But why did he claim that?
I think he allowed it to be claimed on his behalf. I don't think it was something that he specifically, you know, said, of course, he's my cousin. It was more that in a number of early interviews, people would say to him, oh, so are you related? I mean, that would be my guess.
I think the
bigger picture, really, is that Gorky is inventing himself in a new in the new world.
Was he an artist in the old world?
No, I mean the decision seems to come on arrival in America. His mother had aspirations for him to be a writer, so we're told at least. But it seems to be a complete commitment to art happens very suddenly and in great depth and with great passion on his arrival in America and with his encounter with the art museums, particularly in Boston, where he first studied painting.
So this is more than somebody who's saying, right, I'm going to reinvent myself in a new country. I'm going to call myself an artist because that's good for business. It was a case of also being genuine about embracing the art world as a new opportunity.
I think you're absolutely right. In a sense, even beyond that, I don't think he saw it as an opportunity. I think he found something in looking at art and in his evident skill as an artist that perhaps he wasn't aware that he had until he started trying, that answered a deeper inner need. He was driven as an artist. It wasn't that he was seeking to just mark himself out as an individual. It was that he lived for his art.
He arrived in the States as a young man. How did he teach himself the skills of an artist?
Well, I think he is clearly, naturally, a brilliant draftsman. I think that is evident from the earliest drawings, but also right the way through his career. When you look at the late period of abstract paintings, line plays an incredibly important role. It's sinuous and flexible and evocative of all sorts of energies and possibilities without necessarily depicting things in with a sort of precision that allows you to say, oh, well, that's a cat or a jug or something. He has that natural ability. What he learns in Boston, I think, is a greater sense of discipline and what it means to work as an artist in the wider world. But clearly, he just was fabulously talented as it came to him naturally.
How much did his past in the old world impact on the sort of art that he took on in the new world?
Well, that's an interesting question. He was seen in America as primarily a sort of European artist, not least because he was claiming variously to be Russian or Georgian or various other European nationalities and to have studied in France and things. But his encounter with European art, and particularly European contemporary art, is through the small number of galleries showing such works in New York in the late 1920s, and through reproduction, through magazines and periodicals. But he seems to have had a very acute sense of what was possible from those, and to infuse it with a really thoroughgoing knowledge of what was in the museums of older art. He spent a lot of time at the Metropolitan looking at, medieval tapestries, Poussin, Greek sculpture.
You're listening to Nights on Radio New Zealand National. I'm talking to Matthew Gale from the Tate Modern Gallery in London about Achille Gorky, an Armenian artist who became, well, actually, he wasn't an artist in Armenia. He became an artist in the United States of America. From what you're telling me, Matthew, it's a tight line that he followed, because he could have been kind of dismissed as a fraud when he was claiming things about his past that weren't quite true.
Yes, fraud's putting it a little strongly, I think. He had a vivid imagination, and he was willing to tell people one or two slightly elaborated bits and pieces that would help him at that time. I guess this is not unusual for people who are literally inventing themselves in order to make their struggle with life a little bit easier.
I guess the reason it worked was because his art struck a chord with people.
I think that's right. He very rapidly in the 1920s and early 1930s comes to be seen in America as a key figure of amongst those artists who are looking at what it is to make modern art. And his combination of skill and knowledge makes him a sort of natural leader for a generation of artists who would follow on.
Did he mix with other young artists in the art scene on the East Coast of the United States?
Very much so. He was a close friend of Stuart Davis, who was a key figure for that generation who had spent time in Paris and was making Cubist paintings. He seems to have been a genuinely warm and generous friend to many artists and to many others. And towards the end of the 30s, his circle widened with the arrival in New York of the French surrealists who were escaping the war in Europe. And he got to know André Breton, the leader of the surrealists, but a lot of the people associated with surrealism who arrived in America, Max Ernst, Yves Tanguy, Peggy Guggenheim.
Did he settle happily into America in the end?
An interesting question. My view of him is that he is primarily an American artist. Mm. There's no sense in which his formation could have taken place in any other place. Whether he was happy with that situation is difficult to tell. There was a period in the 30s when his sister returned to Armenia, and there are stories that maybe Gorky aspired to do the same. But it does seem to me that would have made his own choice of career impossible to continue in the way that he set about it. So if one imagines Gorky, and I think it's right to do so, as a person totally dedicated to his art, he will do anything to allow it to be made. That meant that he was committed to staying in New York, which was the place where he could most easily work.
And initially, I think he was in a happy marriage, but it turned sour. And the marriage failed, but also he had a lot of bad luck. I mean, let alone what happened to him in Armenia. And his studio caught fire, he caught cancer, his marriage failed, and he ended up killing himself, didn't he?
Yes, it's a life that is really overshadowed by tragedy. And the real test of his work is to be able to look at it without that cloud descending over it. It's extremely difficult to do. I mean, one's aware of the extraordinarily testing and tragic circumstances of his childhood. And as you say, that it ends with not so much the failure of his marriage, but the results of his illness. His cancer made him have mood swings, or so we understand, which indicated to his wife that she should take the young children away from him because he had bouts of tendency to have bouts of violence. So there was a collapse there at the end as well. But I think all the way through, the work is there as evidence of a man full of creative energy in which everything is poured into the canvas, addressing you standing in front of it.
I read an account of his life that early on, before he left Armenia, his father left the family to go to the United States and was never seen again. And I wondered if he ever managed to track down his father or find out what happened to his father.
Yes, there are slightly mysterious circumstances around that. I mean, his father left in 1908, and primarily to avoid being conscripted into the Turkish army, which obviously was an extremely difficult situation for an Armenian. So he left in 1908, and Gorky didn't see him again till 1920. But they did meet up as soon as Gorky and his sister arrived. There then is an extended period. In fact, his father didn't die until early 1948. There's an extended period in which Gorky rather keeps his family as a separate existence. They're primarily in New England, whereas he's in New York, in various parts of in Provincetown and in Rhode Island. And so the family is slightly kept at arm's length. He's clearly absolutely devoted to them, but in order to make his art, he must live in a different way in the more bohemian atmosphere of New York. So I don't think he was ever fully reconciled to his father. There seemed to be suggestions that he held his father to blame for not getting them out of Armenia sooner, especially after the massacres in Van, that help didn't arrive sooner. But he clearly continued to have contact with his father and with his wider family.
How important do you think Gorky was to other American modernists like Pollock, who started to become famous after him?
He's a key figure. He manages to, as it were, straddle the various strands of American painting in the 1930s, and then make this utterly breathtaking breakthrough in 1942 to an art that is much more liberated, much more free in the way in which the paint is applied to the canvas, in the way in which It's able to grasp the possibilities of abstraction, and in that way, it's a gestural abstraction, an abstraction that reflects the movement of the body, rather than the hard edge abstraction that many had become used to in the 1930s, associated with Mondrian and such. For those around him, Gorky is doing astonishing things, and they're clearly watching what he's doing and taking notice. He's a close friend of de Kooning's. Not so much a friend of Pollock's, but Pollock is clearly more of a rival and, as I say, watching what Gorky's doing. There are stories of him coming to the studio just to check up. And I think it's clear that all of these artists who are just marginally younger are learning from Gorky's example, and that breakthrough moment in 42 means that Gorky, for 3 or 4 years, is making art that everyone in New York is looking at. And all of those Europeans who are based in New York, the surrealists around André Breton, are looking at and, you know, waiting with bated breath for the next step.
Why run a retrospective now? Has this been something you've wanted to do for a while, Matthew?
Well, the retrospective was put together by Michael Taylor at the Philadelphia Museum of Art, and he's been working on it for a long time. I mean, I've been long interested in Gorky, and so it's a great honour and privilege to be involved with the show. It's the first really substantial review of Gorky's work since 1981. So it's long overdue, and we've together thought that this was the moment to bring Gorky back to a new generation and allow his very particular story of exile and emigration and struggle and achievement to be brought to a wider audience.
Matthew, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Matthew Gale from the Tate Gallery in London, England, which is holding an exhibition, retrospective exhibition of art by the Armenian-American Arshil Gorky, also known as Vostenik Manoug Adoyan, who died in 1948. As I said, his art to me reminds you a bit of the Spaniard Jean Miró. But if you want to have a look at his art, you can go to the Tate website, tate.org.uk/modern/exhibitions/Arshil Gorky, all one word. Arshil Gorky is spelt, because you can also Google him, and there's quite a good article about him on Wikipedia, spelt Arshile Gorky, as in the writer. Arshil, Arshile Gorky.